dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I'm your host. I will be guiding you around the battle space of the war of ideas, as we do each weekday here at Secure Freedom Radio, with some of the singular people that it is my privilege to work with and introduce to you. One will be my colleague Christine Brim, the Chief Operating Officer of the Center for Security Policy. She'll be joining us to talk about some insights she's gotten into the problems that we're finding with the Conservative Political Action Conference scheduled for its annual convocation in Washington weekend after next, specifically involving some very problematic Muslim activists who appear, I think, to any objective observer, not to be very conservative and certainly not to be playing for the same team as the conservatives who will be there in such numbers, though their numbers are being diminished, should be noted, by a number of very prominent individuals who have decided not to attend for reasons having to do with this and other problems with CPAC this year. So we'll be getting into a bit of that with Christine Brim in segment two. Segment three will feature Michael Prell, the author of a brilliant new book called Under Dogma. It is the Rosetta Stone, I think, for the psychology that is doing so much to undermine America's power and its prestige and, inexorably, its security around the world. So Michael Prell in segment three, and then segment four, our go-to man for the boots-on-the-ground perspective, Jim Hansen of Black5.net, will talk with us about Egypt's prospects, including what might happen with all of that military gear that we have been selling the Egyptians for decades, some of which is quite formidable. Also, we'll touch on the double game being played by the Pakistanis, a favorite subject, and Jim's got a marvelous insight on that. But first, I want to talk with you a little bit about my own take on this Egypt business, specifically the question of President Obama's conduct of our policy towards this very strategic nation at a very dangerous time. A friend of mine, Dick Morris, has observed that President Obama's tenure will, in his estimation, be darkly remembered by our countrymen for his having lost Egypt. Now, this is something that we've heard in the past. Presidents, rightly or wrongly, are assigned the blame for friendly nations being turned into very unfriendly nations, often at huge cost to all of us. The problem is that since the effect of the Egyptian government of Hosni Mubarak collapsing imminently and its replacement by one dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood will likely be a terrible regional war, at minimum, it would be bad enough if the Obama administration were simply culpable for the sort of malign neglect that contributed in the past to the toppling of other friends of the United States. And unfortunately, I think the question to be pursued, hopefully by the new Republican House of Representatives, is not going to be who lost Egypt, but rather who tossed Egypt, as in to the wolves. Now, to be sure, WikiLeaks and others are documenting the kind of slavish subordination of American policy to Mr. Mubarak's preferences that is all too common in dealing with such autocrats. But it appears, and the evidence is still preliminary here, but it appears that the Obama administration has actually been reaching out for some time to the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, among other places, including here in the United States. That's a subject we'll be talking with Christine Brim about momentarily. But most obviously, as Sean Hannity noted on his program with me and Egyptian expatriate author and former Muslim, Noni Darwish, who was our guest yesterday, President Obama actually insisted that Muslim Brotherhood representatives be included in the audience for his now somewhat notorious speech in Cairo in June 2009. Then in September 2009, the Obama administration actually co-sponsored with Egypt a deeply problematic resolution aimed at preventing defamation of religion and a kind of Sharia blasphemy program. Now, to be sure, it was Mubarak's regime that was the lead sponsor on behalf of this organization known as the Organization of the Islamic Conference, a kind of multinational Muslim mafia. But the truth of the matter is that the OIC, as it's called, its agenda, its views, closely correlate to the Muslim Brotherhood's Sharia-promoting agenda. And for more on that, I, as always, commend to you Sharia, the Threat to America, the new book of the Center for Security Policy. Now, beyond all of that, the effort to bring the Muslim Brotherhood in a very visible way into his speech and the embrace of a Muslim Brotherhood-like blasphemy agenda at the United Nations, the Obama administration has evidently, according to Aaron Klein and the London Telegraph, been involved in a number of other mostly lower visibility efforts to promote Brotherhood operatives, or at least folks who share the Brotherhood's ambition of bringing down the Mubarak government. And these efforts can only, I imagine, have been perceived by the Brotherhood as a green light for the sorts of efforts that are now being made. And that was even before what's happened in just the past few days with the president, with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, with White House spokesman Robert Gibbs, in turn pressing Mubarak publicly not to use violence against the demonstrators, then calling on him to negotiate with them, then insisting that he make an orderly transition to democracy, then announcing that important non-secular actors, as it was put yesterday by the president, should be included in that successor government. And then, after the dictator actually announced yesterday that he would not run for re-election, telling him to leave office now. We've learned also in recent days that Frank Wisner, the president's envoy to all of this in Egypt, former U.S. ambassador there, has actually met with a top Muslim Brotherhood operative, Issam El Iranian, at the U.S. Embassy in Cairo. It's unmistakable, I think, that the, again, perception that all of this must be conveying is that Washington now deems the Muslim Brotherhood to be a legitimate interlocutor, one that is welcome to exercise power in Cairo. Well, I think where this leads us is the ascendancy, certainly, and ultimately probably the triumph of the Brotherhood. Before that debacle eventuates, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that in the course of the program, Congress should immediately launch investigations to determine exactly what President Obama and his subordinates have done to toss Egypt to the Islamist wolves, and what may yet be done to limit the damage thereby performed to our credibility as an ally and to our security interests. Those are my thoughts. I welcome yours. SecureFreedomRadio.com. Also, our Facebook and Twitter accounts. Frank Affney's the name. Next up, we'll talk with Christine Brim about what is going on with the Muslim Brotherhood's influence operations aimed at the conservative movement, and how will it manifest itself at CPAC? All of that and more straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hello, and welcome to today's lottery drawing. Good luck. And here's today's winning numbers. First one up, it's not yours. Second one, not yours. And another number that's not yours. Okay, this is one number that's yours. It's a 5, but you don't get any money for that. And the final number is not yours.
Yep, so chances are you're not going to hit the lottery anytime soon. Don't get us wrong. The lottery can be fun every now and then. Just please don't rely on it for your future savings. How about this? Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte every day. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Ride your bike instead of buying all that gas. These changes alone can save you thousands a year. Thousands. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. Feed that piggy bank. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
This is the greatest country in the world. Every day, people in America live in 100% freedom. Our military allows us to do that. It's comforting to know that when American lives are lost in defense of our freedom, an organization like TAPS is there to help the friends and families of those who have died while serving our country.
TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Visit us online at TAPS.org or call 1-800-959-TAPS.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of 2 hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Christine Brim, the Chief Operating Officer of the Center for Security Policy, my colleague, and a woman who has extraordinary understanding of the sorts of threats that we're facing, from those who seek through stealth jihad to wage a subversive campaign of sabotage from within. Those are, of course, the words describing the Muslim Brotherhood's mission statement. And I've invited Christine to join us today to talk a little bit about how these efforts are manifesting themselves at the moment, in particular with respect to the effort to not only influence the United States government, not only influence the media and our academic institutions and the financial sector and religious communities and so on, but specifically how the conservative movement itself is being targeted for some of these same sorts of agendas, namely, I think, dividing and conquering, disinforming, and otherwise subverting. So Christine Brim, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Well,
always great
you.
To have you with us.
Okay. Well, I'm here today to talk about a single case study that I think exemplifies so much of the problem that we face with these Muslim Brotherhood front groups that are increasingly infiltrating themselves and have been for years into civil society. And here we're talking about the American Conservative Union, which is sponsoring CPAC.
Before we go into there, let's just define why we have reason to believe Muslim Brotherhood front groups actually are operating in the United States and why they would have this tie-in to the organization CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, whose meeting will be taking place weekend after next.
Well, we really have conclusive evidence that was found by the U.S. government in the Holy Land Foundation terrorism finance trial, which absolutely identified using documents from the Brotherhood itself that they had been here since the early 90s, placing organizations, which they listed, including the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the Muslim Student Association is listed, the Islamic Society of North America, Muslim Communities Associations, and a host of others, most of whom were then subsequently named as unindicted co-conspirators, a decision which was on the conviction
in the Holy Land Foundation trial,
which then they appealed and which has recently been completely and unquestionably upheld by a higher court. So if you essentially are willing to believe the facts and believe the documentation and believe the evidence and believe the U.S. court system, which has upheld this trial now multiple times, you have to accept the fact that we have proven that the Muslim Brotherhood has explicitly tried to put a host of organizations in place with the mission of legitimating the most radical version of political Islam and Sharia as a doctrine, and to get their representatives in as many places in both the U.S. government, but also in civil society, in religious groups and others.
We're talking once again with Christine Brim, the chief operating officer of our organization, the Center for Security Policy, and a woman who's been intimately involved with trying to break the code on what we're confronting here. Played a very important role as one of the authors of the new Sharia, the Threat to America book of the Center for Security Policy. And Christine, some have said, taking the point that the Justice Department has prosecuted some of these groups, certainly identifying them as unindicted co-conspirators, part of the Holy Land Foundation conspiracy, and so on. And yet, other parts of the U.S. government, we'll get to the conservative movement in a moment, but other parts of the United States government continue to do business with these people all the time. How do you square that circle? How do we explain what's going on here? And does that not give some excuse to conservatives to think, well, it must be okay if the U.S. government is engaging in outreach with these organizations for us to do so as well?
Because of our failure to recognize the threat, the U.S. government has at this point a completely contradictory and indeed incoherent policy on this issue. And what we have is the FBI and the Department of Justice and a goodly number of very smart people in the military, I would say, as well, and elsewhere, aware that these groups are Muslim Brotherhood front groups, aware that they are engaged in trying to subvert U.S. society. On the other hand, since the 90s, when they first entered the government, especially in the Clinton administration, they got in place, they were able to infiltrate and get into the White House and into a variety of other places in a host of roles, as volunteers, as outreach representatives, as simply the identified people from the so-called Muslim community with whom the government would deal. And the government, in most cases, has been dealing with the representatives of the Muslim Brotherhood front groups. They presented themselves as the representatives of the Muslim community, and the government bought into that precisely because there were enough people in place who were Muslim Brotherhood front group infiltrators that they then brought in their colleagues. That then
this sounds quite conspiratorial, it's a circular process. But what you've identified and what I think you've been able to document, particularly in Sharia, the Threat to America, is these are the unpleasant facts of life. So bring us to the Conservative Political Action Conference and how these sorts of organizations are finding their way into and exercising influence over even the community that is presumably most likely to stand in the way of this sort of subversive activity.
Well, and there's at least three groups that we could mention, but let's just take a case study of the Muslims for America, which has been represented at the American Conservative Union's CPAC conference now for years. They have a table, they have speakers, and this year, on Friday, they are sponsoring a conference with a completely panel with the innocuous name, The Importance of Faith and Religious Liberty in the U.S. and Abroad. And we're all in favor of faith and religious liberty in the U.S. and abroad, so there's nothing wrong with that. They're sponsoring it. However, the question is, why is ACU letting this group, the American Conservative Union, let Muslims for America sponsor anything, much less have a table? Because this organization, I'll just give you two important things to know. In 2006, they published the American Conservative Union has known about this for some time, and a glowing
Muslims for America,
right? A glowing endorsement of a host of groups who have been identified as Muslim Brotherhood front groups, including CARE, ISNA, the Islamic Circle of North America, affiliated with Pakistan radicals, the American Muslim Council, affiliated with Al-Amudi, now imprisoned for terrorism for 23 years.
Abdurrahman Al-Amudi, one of the kingpins of this whole Brotherhood operation.
And MPAC and others. And so in this editorial by the founder, Seema Gulf Hassan, mother of Muhammad Ali Hassan, who are really the two primary people and possibly the only people of Muslims for America, which nonetheless is given grand legitimacy by its participation to buy its way into CPAC.
Muhammad Ali Hassan, as I recall, ran for some sort of office out in Colorado as a Republican, and then decided he was no longer a Republican because they're all a bunch of racists and bigots. Hardly the sort of person you'd think would be representing this team at CPAC. Is he, in fact, going to be representing this?
It's completely unclear.
Seeming front operation in CPAC?
It's unclear who now is the so-called Muslims for America. Muhammad Ali Hassan has now left the Republican Party and is now a Democrat and has founded a new organization called Constitutionalists for Gays and Immigrants, which has the very public position of the two priorities from a policy point of view, gay marriage and open borders.
Not exactly conservative themes, I think.
But possibly ones that he has been advocating for years under the guise of being a Republican. It was the fact that 70% of the American public opposed the location of the Ground Zero Mosque in Manhattan that he decreed meant that all of the American public were bigots, all Republicans were bigots, and he then left.
This is frightening stuff. Christine, I know you'll be writing on this subject. We'll be looking forward to following it with you closely. This is the sort of thing that is roiling the conservative movement at the moment in the run-up to CPAC, causing many of the prominent figures to decide not to participate this year, and causing others who will be there to, I think, want to make sure that this is the last CPAC where this kind of mischief is made. Divisiveness in the name of inclusion is, in fact, subversion, not part of the conservative movement. Christine Brin, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Super work you do. Next up, we'll be talking with Michael Brell about Underdog, a fascinating insight into what we're afflicted by. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I'll have it looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Stephen and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Stephen a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We are joined by Michael Prell, the author of a wonderful new book entitled Underdogma. The subtitle of it is How America's Enemies Use Our Love for the Underdog to Trash American Power. Hot off the presses, a very, very interesting and compelling read. And Michael Prell, it's great to have you with us to talk a little bit about the thesis of your book, for starters, but then how it bears on so much of what we're seeing happening around us at the moment. So, again, thank you for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio to chat about Underdogma.
Well, thank you, Frank, for having me on. And just before we start, I want to thank you for the work that you do at the Center, I mean, especially now at this time. And with this show, also thank you for your book, Sharia, The Threat to America. I love it.
Terrific.
And finally, thank you for the wonderful words that you wrote for my book, Underdogma. So I'm just grateful.
Well, it's a mutual admiration society. I think we've established that. All right. So tell us about Underdogma, Michael. What's the meaning of a word that you've obviously invented to I think, terrific effect?
Thank you. Well, you and I are doing the same work. I mean, we're sounding the same alarm bell, that American power is being threatened from without and from within, right? So you give people clarity about what's going on, and then under dogma, I shed light on the psychological and philosophical reasons why Americans are surrendering in the war of ideas, and how that emboldens America's enemies.
To just give it, you know, the crystallized version, because they really should read the whole book. Don't just take our word for it. Go out and get it at Amazon or the bookstore near you. Under Dogma, How America's Enemies Use Our Love for the Underdog to Trash American Power. What is it, Michael Prell, that is causing them to have this ideological predisposition?
Well, first let me just briefly define it. Under Dogma, the widespread belief that in any given issue, whichever side has less power, the underdog, is automatically righteous simply because they have less power. And whichever side has more power, like America, is automatically wrong simply because they have more power. It doesn't matter which side is actually right or wrong. All that matters to those who practice under dogma is which side has less or more power. And what we're talking about here is a fundamental different way of looking at power. So if we look at the way, let's say, Osama bin Laden and radical Islamists look at power, he said himself, when people see the strong horse and the weak horse, by nature they will like the strong horse. That is precisely the opposite of under dogma. You know, Mark Stein, he wrote about America's demographic disadvantage to its enemies. They're having more kids, we're having less. In under dogma, I show how America is putting itself at a philosophical disadvantage to its enemies by championing the weak horse and demonizing the strong horse.
Yeah, and it follows from that, I guess, Michael, and this is really where we most especially intersect here at Secure Freedom Radio, is the desire to have the United States be less powerful, to be more worthy of their admiration or support. So it's actually not only the case, as you say, that we're sort of rooting for the wrong side and we're pursuing policies that are ill-advised from the point of view of our survival, but actually we're driving down. And you couldn't find a better practitioner of under dogma than Barack Obama, could you?
Absolutely. And you understand this better than most people, that when we have a president who does bow down and apologize for American power, that doesn't satisfy our enemies, that doesn't make them happy, that doesn't make them love us more, that makes them hate us more. You know, appeasement,
contempt.
You feed the crocodile hoping he'll eat you last, but what under dogmatists don't understand is that when you feed these particular crocodiles, it makes them want to eat you first.
Yeah.
When you show weakness,
faster,
it triggers their kill signal.
Yeah.
It is actually a trigger for them to attack. And,
yeah,
and if you don't trust me, take Osama bin Laden's own words. He said the reason why he felt emboldened to do 9/11 was because there was no response to the call.
Right.
When you show weakness, that does not make them love you more.
Right. We're talking with Michael Prell. He is, as I mentioned, the author of Under Dogma, How America's Enemies Use Our Love for the Underdog to Trash American Power. He is also, by the way, a writer and strategist for the Tea Party Patriots, a marvelous team that has transformed America in important respects in the last election cycle, and has a Polly Award to his credit, one of the highest distinctions that one can have in the advertising business, the public policy advertising business, as well as serving with a distinction, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel and Canada's Prime Minister Stephen Harper. And Michael, let me ask you this, because I think what you've just said is so critical to our understanding of what's wrong with this picture. The Islamists, particularly the Sharia adherent folks, as you say, have a genetic predisposition to regard efforts to accommodate them, efforts to appease them, efforts to, at the very minimum, do what they want us to do, which is sort of a central piece of, I guess, under dogma, as an act of submission.
Yeah.
And it's the kill mechanism, I mean literally the kill mechanism, it tells them, especially these Muslim Brotherhood sorts, that they are now good to go, not just with the stealth jihad for achieving, you know, our submission and their supremacy, but the violent kind, to make us feel subdued. And so this is such a critically important insight. And I wonder, as you are watching this play out, specifically with respect to Egypt and the Muslim Brotherhood there and so many other places, is under dogma a critical component of why this seeming contempt for the United States being exhibited by all kinds of folks in the Arab world and beyond is now reaching such a fever pitch.
Absolutely. Well, on the cover of the book, it suggests the question, you know, how do America's enemies use our love for the underdog to trash American power? And the answer is they don't have to, because those who practice under dogma are doing the job for them. I mean, we remember Barack Obama's apology tour throughout the world. And what I did was, when all of this started happening with Egypt, I went and I looked at the tour and I asked myself, how did the tour work out? And I went back and traced it. So he went to Turkey and he apologized for American power there. And now Turkey is lost. He went to China and bowed down many times. And now China is emboldened and embracing its power like never before. Mm-hmm. He had that speech in Cairo where he apologized for American power and, quote, colonialism that denied rights and opportunities to many Muslims. And now we have the Muslim Brotherhood on the march. So, and I would actually throw into that, you know, Iran and North Korea and Russia. When you fail to embrace American power, the rest of the world notices, and they have a fundamentally different view of power. Here's a key point in Under Dogma, is that every person listening right now, you've probably spent most of your life at the highest seat of power in the world. So it's a convenience for you to be able to, you know, think, well, maybe American power isn't so good and whatever. The rest of the world does not look at our power that way. They want to take it from you.
It's a kind of noblesse oblige with an overlay of diversity and multiculturalism and post-Americanism, and you've really captured it beautifully in Under Dogma. Michael Pratt, we're going to run out of time here before we run out of things to talk with you about. Let me just ask you very quickly in conclusion, what is it you recommend we do as a necessary corrective to this clearly self-destructive dogma that so many Americans, including, sadly, the President of the United States, is exhibiting day in and day out?
Well, really, it's two steps. One is to understand the problem fully, and the other is to take action. And both, you can do this right now, and it's not just a straight book pitch. If you buy this book, and if you've been nodding your head this whole time, and you get it, and you think you're immune from Under Dogma, and you're on board, think again. I guarantee you that when you read this book, you're going to find parts of Under Dogma that have crept into your heart and your mind, and you don't even know it's there. So please go to under-dogma.com. There's a free download, and it's not just a couple pages. It's a big chunk of the heart of this book. And I want you to be able to pull this belief system and yank it out of you completely. And then the last chapter of the book I call The Antidote to Under Dogma, and I give you some ways to re-embrace American power and American exceptionalism.
Yeah, well, it's so vital that be done at a national level, as well as, you know, the various tiers of popular opinion all the way down, that we not compromise this exceptional experiment and allow or even invite and perhaps, as you say, facilitate its destruction in a world that becomes more dangerous by the day precisely because of this perception of our weakness. You know, I'm fond of saying, Michael, that the president's doctrine, and I think it is the perfect parallel to what you've written here in Under Dogma, is embolden our enemies, undermine our allies, and diminish our country. And the time for corrective action is now. We are already in full swing in a presidential campaign. Let's get this this vexing Under Dogma out of our systems now before it's too late. Michael Prell, thank you so much for this really important work, and I look forward to visiting with you further about its implications and applications in the near future. Next up, Jim Hansen will be talking to us about the world from the boots-on-the-ground perspective as the Middle East goes to hell in a handbasket. Straight ahead.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's Wednesday, segment four. That means it's Jim Hansen time. We're going to visit with Jim about a couple of things. But first of all, Jim, I want to get your take on the story that we've been following throughout the program, as everybody is at the moment, because it's top of mind. And that is your perspective as a guy who's logged some time in the world of Arabi. Of what is happening in Egypt at the moment and what the implications are from, as I'm fond of saying, your boots on the ground perspective at black5.net.
Well, Frank, I've actually been on the ground in a couple countries during coups or attempted coups. And it's
now, were you responsible for trying to arrange them?
Not actually. Actually, in this case, it was allies. Okay. And we were there helping in case some of our friends needed to leave quickly.
Got it.
But in the course of that, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to folks who, you know, were right in the middle of action like that. And what I think is hilarious is the idea that any of us can know, you know, where the powers lie and what's actually going to happen. It's such a random event, you know, driven by popular sentiment that's unfocused. You know, what's the platform of the Egyptian protesters? Nobody knows. And no to Mubarak. You know, after that, it pretty much... So I guess my thoughts on that is I always look at chaos as opportunity. And I realize there are some huge, huge problems that could happen with Mubarak out of power, you know, and the possibility of the Islamists and the Brotherhood moving in. But I also think there's a possibility to empower some folks who haven't been, you know, able to do anything. So we may be able to make some friends. Wouldn't it be great to have some friends in some place other than Iraq?
Yeah. So, but unfortunately, Jim, I think it's fair to say that unfortunately there are other people who look at chaos as an opportunity as well. And if they are numerous, disciplined, organized, and ruthless. And I'm not talking about our special forces on the ground, but they are the Muslim Brotherhood. Chances are, it seems to me, that this will, in fact, over time, if not immediately, over time, wind up playing to their advantage and to our detriment. Your thoughts?
You know, that is the biggest problem, and that is the biggest fear. And I guess my view is, since we can't eliminate them from the picture, we can't isolate them, then the only thing we can do is try to mitigate against them by making friends with the people who don't like them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a two-headed sword, you know, it's a double-edged sword. We have to be fearful that they'll take power, but we have to take advantage of this opportunity to say, okay, you secular folks, we heard about moderate Muslims, time to raise up, or you're about to get deocrified.
You bet they are. Jim Hansen is our guest. Jim is, of course, one of the driving forces behind the Mill Bloggers at black5.net. He is also an inspiring leader of the Warrior Legacy Foundation, and he brings to all of these activities and his commentary here at Secure Freedom Radio and at BigPeace.com, the expertise of a special operator in the United States Armed Forces, in which he served with great distinction. And Jim, just one thought that I particularly wanted to visit with you about is we've got an immense amount of very sophisticated, very capable, advanced even, U.S. weapon systems in the Egyptian arsenal at the moment. And if this does go badly, if the Muslim Brotherhood eventually, if not in the very near future, takes power, what are your thoughts about what might happen to or be done with, more to the point, such weapons?
I would say that I find that scenario less concerning than just the political takeover by the Muslim Brotherhood. Because the one group in Egypt that everybody in the U.S. is feeling pretty good about is the military. We have tremendously good relations with them and have for a very long time. You know, we've been doing joint and bilateral things with them for 50 years now. You know, so I think there are deep ties there, and there is a strong belief that the military is not going to allow a theocracy in reality to be born out of this.
Yeah.
You know, and to the extent that they'll take power if they have to. So
here's my countervailing point. I think you're right in terms of our experience to date, and that is one of the advantages of having the kind of military to military relationships that we've fostered over many years with the Egyptians. But Jim, one of the things that troubles me is if you look at some of the data on the sentiments of the Egyptian people when it comes to things like Sharia and the caliphate and suicide bombing and female genital mutilation and on and on and on, the numbers are enormously high. And while it is certainly true, as your experience, I think, would attest, that you can have great relationships with people, particularly as they move through the ranks from junior officers to senior ones, the vast preponderance of the enlisted ranks, the lower ranks, are going to be made up of people who presumably reflect at least substantially those sentiments. And this is what really, again, worries me about where the military may go as a bulwark against some of this. You know, we've seen with the Shah's military, we've seen with, I think, the Lebanese military right now and others, that in due course they do succumb to this political leadership. So can we be that sanguine?
Well, you outline what is the nightmare scenario. If the military, it's like in Pakistan.
Yeah.
You know, the only bulwark we have against chaos there is the military.
Yeah.
And they've held out fairly well, not brilliantly, but better than I think we could have expected. So we need to do the same thing. You know, we need to empower the anti-Islamists to the extent of the I don't care Islamists, you know, and try to at least some power and give as much support as possible to the military. Because like you said, if they go, we're done.
Yeah. Jim, speaking of Pakistan, and again, our guest is Jim Hansen of Black5.net and BigPeace.com. You had just a classic line in one of your posts, I think, at Big Peace, if I'm not mistaken. Pakistan is not so much an ally as a co-conspirator, and we are only in on a small number of the conspiracies they are running. Boy, does that ever capture the double game in Pakistan. So where does that leave us with these characters?
Oh, you know, I mean, Frank, I think you and I, it'd be fun almost to anthologize our talks about Pakistan, because I think everything that we've discussed is going to come through. I think we're going to have some sort of peace treaty banged out over the next 9 to 12 months that will bring in as many rogue or, you know, rogue from the Taliban's perspective commanders from their side and, you know, the Karzai government and whoever potentially. I'm not sure Pakistan will be a signer or just an influencer of it, but that's our exit strategy. You know, I still think that's the most likely scenario, is that is the rationale, you know, to start bringing U.S. troops home so Obama can then, as he faces re-election, you know, have made his 2012 campaign promise into his 2016 campaign promise.
Well, before we let you go, Jim Henson, let's talk a little bit about Afghanistan. I had a chance to see this terrific National Geographic movie called Restrepo the other day, and I gather you've actually know some of the guys who featured prominently in it. Tell us a little bit about them and the development that you were interested on the ground there that might show the way for urban renewal, Afghan style.
Well, Restrepo is a movie about one platoon of the 2nd Battalion, 503rd Airborne Infantry. So 173rd Airborne, these guys are paratroopers. And they had what might be the most intense combat tour for any U.S. unit since World War II.
Yeah, I mean, Battle of the Bulge, maybe.
Seriously, Band of Brothers level of combat. In 15 months, they averaged 3 troop in contact, which is a firefight, per day for 15 months for one battalion. You know, that's just outrageous. They were in the Korangal and Weigel Valleys with right about the time that the Taliban began reinfiltrating. And that movie, Restrepo, I highly recommend it to anyone because the filmmakers who made it spent a total of 6 months with that one platoon, and they show as vivid a look at how hard and how well our guys deal with that hard fighting in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and the other thing, Jim, and unfortunately we're going to run out of time for urban renewal. We'll do that with you next week. But the other thing that comes across so powerfully, and you know, you're not going to be surprised at this. In fact, you exemplify it. The quality of these young men as we have asked them to take on these incredibly hard tasks and bear these burdens. And frankly, what I was left with throughout, Jim, was the sense of how unworthy we may really be of these fabulous guys. Especially, we were just talking with Michael Prell about the underdogma that most of us seem to be walking around with between our ears, that you know, power is a bad thing. These guys are the pointy end of the spear, and they deserve our support. Jim Henson, so do you. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to all of you for listening today at Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you do so again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.